As home to the world's most fashionable film festival and its most glamorous beaches, the French Riviera, or the Côte d'Azur, is certainly the most stylish stretch of Mediterranean coastline. Its art and cuisine are fresh and colorful, and its popularity means a little insider advice for enjoying the region will help a lot when you're heading off to the Riviera. We're joined in our studio by two French guides, Nina Sefuzati and Véronique Savoy, and they're going to share tips and insights on France's favorite getaway destination. Nina and Véronique, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Véronique, what does the French Riviera mean to the people of France?
A place where the weather is wonderful. It's a pretty affluent vacation location. It's not cheap to go there, so I think a lot of people go there and they're ready to spend some money there. It's the weather, I think, that attracts people, the beautiful beaches, the lovely little towns, the villages in the backcountry. There's a lot to do.
Does the TGV, I know it goes to Avignon, does it go from Paris all the way to the Riviera?
Yeah, you can do Marseille, you can do Nice as well, though it crawls all the way
it's
to Nice.
It's a little slow.
It's not a TGV anymore all the way to Nice.
Okay.
Yeah, Nice to Paris by train is very slow.
But Nice to Paris by airplane is quite easy.
Yeah, and a lovely airport in Nice and very efficient.
I love
That's the airport best way.
I've flown home to the United States.
From there.
Leaving from Nice, it's just great. What does Côte d'Azur mean?
The Azure Coast. The Blue Coast, because of the Mediterranean, that's right there. We nickname, the Mediterranean's nickname is La Grande Bleue, the Big Blue.
I've never heard of
so
the Big
Azure,
Blue.
So Azure, it's blue. And you see it if you landed in Nice. It's a beautiful sight when you land in Nice from the plane.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
You know, from the little hilltop in Nice, I love looking down at the coast. Anglaise, the Promenade
des Anglais.
The English Promenade and that beautiful arc of a beach. And then you see that beautiful blue water. Nina, what is your story? You're Danish, but you ended up living in the south of France.
I ended up in the south of France, the worst places to live.
What brought you to the south of France?
Well, because I met a Frenchman.
You met a Frenchman. The Dane meets the Frenchman.
So I ended up living in the south of France. So I think I can do this. Great weather, but I discovered the beauty of the area also.
And you lead groups around and you're a tour guide in the south of France. There's a lot of tourism in the south of France, a lot of great guides. And you're like a lot of the people historically that have fallen in love with the French Riviera. When you think about the French Riviera, it's where Brits, where Russians, where artists, where VIPs throughout the generations have ended up. What's the story with the connection with Britain and with Russia?
Well, actually, it started with, there was a British doctor who figured out that the nice climate, the perfect climate for all these tuberculosis, all kind of breathing problems for the Brits, because they have terrible weather in Britain, we know that, right?
So you sort of get mold in your lungs or something.
But it's interesting because he wrote this book about like climate treatment, right? Your treatment through climate. So all these Brits went away and then because it became fashionable. Right?
This would be in the 1800s?
It actually started late 1700s and then continued through the 1800s. And then it was a really boom right at the end of the 1800s. But it went slow in the beginning and then it came up. And then the Russians followed because it became fashionable, right? It became fashionable.
Well, if you don't like the weather in London, you probably don't like the weather in Moscow, right?
Exactly, yeah. And then they started buying these huge villas and, you know, building. And that's why there's a Russian Orthodox church in Nice, for instance. It's quite
a
surprising.
Magnificent church.
Beautiful church, yeah.
And there's that huge chandelier in the big hotel, I think, in
Negresco.
Negresco. It's a beautiful hotel, if you can sneak in, right?
It's sort of the
elegance of the old days. And you step into that ballroom and you go, my goodness, this chandelier looks like for a Russian czar or something like that.
Yeah.
And it actually was. And then in 1917, the revolution in Russia breaks out. You built this big chandelier. Let's hang it in the hotel. A little bit of this reminder that early tourism was for nobles and aristocrats, and they would
It's interesting, and it starts off as a treatment for against diseases of different kinds, right? And it's like you need this treatment if you have money to go to the Riviera.
In fact, the front door of the beachfront hotel is actually on the back side. Originally,
there you go.
Why was that?
Because they avoided the sunshine, didn't they?
Yeah,
they didn't want to get a suntan. That wasn't fashionable. Now it's pretty fashionable.
People out in the fields would have a suntan, but if you're an elegant woman, you don't want a tan.
Oh no, you covered up. You covered up, right? Get umbrellas and
they had the
long sleeves Oh yeah.
Our guides to the French Riviera are Nina Sefuzati, who specializes in southern France from her home base in Provence, and Véronique Savoy, who offers custom tours of Paris and her hometown of Tours in the Loire Valley. She also posts online virtual tours and hosts French lessons at francewithvero.com, spelled V-E-R-O. One thing about the French Riviera is it's strung like a bunch of charms along a bracelet, right along the coastline there. Nice is a great town. To me, Nice is the one town that's not a resort, it's a real town, you know? And then from there, within an hour on either direction, you've got great towns to check out. Véronique, if you're thinking of the favorite three or four stops on that charm bracelet, what would you recommend?
Going either way from Nice, I would say Menton would be one, because Menton is the last French city on the coast before you reach Italy. I really like Menton.
M-E-N-T-O-N.
Correct, Menton. Yes. Okay. And so going that way, but if you go the other way, I would say Antibes. Mm. Antibes is a lovely town with a great, wonderful museum. Mm. And an old town as well. Cannes. Cannes is like Nice, a big city. But there are others. It's just a big one. But there are smaller ones as well. So you can really... I like the backcountry too, the little villages like Aix and...
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Now, to me... Cannes is a big city, and to me it's overrated because it's famous for the film festival.
The film festival. Nice was always my favorite over Cannes.
See,
there's no question.
Let me be just really bold. I do not like Cannes.
Disappointed?
I don't know why you'd go to Cannes, because got Antibes, you've got Villefranche, you've got Monte Carlo even, you've got Nice, you've got Menton. The backdoor town is Menton. The backdoor, the town with nothing glitzy.
Yes, and Menton is beautiful. Yeah. And you can go to the beach there, you can go up in the old town. There's a lot to do there.
You know, the first time I went to Menton, I went on a bus ticket, and the bus ticket cost me like €2, about $2 or something. Yep. Bus number 100, I got on it in Nice. And the beautiful thing is it drives right along the coastline through so many wonderful, famous places. Mm-hmm. And the end of the line, I believe, was Menton, as you said, just before the Italian border. What's the story, Véronique, about the French Riviera area being French, because it feels Italian a lot?
This happened in the 19th century during the Second Empire when Napoleon III, this happened in several regions actually, even north of the French Riviera. We were recently on a tour, and there are other regions like that, but basically under Napoleon III during the Second Empire, these regions were asked to vote. They were asked to vote, let's just put it this way. And so they became French. And Nice became French.
So wait a minute. There's all of these areas that are today in the Italian border area of France. Mm-hmm. And in the 1860s, you have the Risorgimento in Italy, this movement for unification. Mm-hmm. And they didn't know for sure if the people along this border area wanted to be with the newly united Italy or to stay with France. Was that the issue?
Yeah. It's my understanding. Not everybody was enthused, especially in the Haute-Savoie, in the Savoie, in the mountains. Yeah. They were not really enthused with the idea of joining France, if you will.
Oh, they might have rather gone with Victor Emmanuel in Italy.
Yeah.
France kind of bullied them into France?
I'm sure. And so Napoleon III had arguments that he put forward, and they became French, and that's how Nice became French. But Nice is so Italian.
It feels Italian.
The wonderful pizza, the architecture, the walls, the colors on the walls. You feel like you're in Italy.
With a different French flavor. It's a very interesting mix.
You can hear it in the language also, right?
Because the
Nissart is their local dialect, right? But it's just the way that they speak French also. Mm-hmm. It sounds almost Italian. You know,
Speaking of sounding Italian, Nina, your last name, Sefusati.
Is Italian.
It doesn't sound very French to me.
No, it doesn't sound very French, No, that's the story of my husband's family.
So your husband's family was an Italian, spoke Italian, but they lived in that area.
They actually were part of that huge amount of people that fled the fascism in Italy and Mussolini.
And then,
you know, when you have one member of your family living in one part of the France, then the others would follow later. So there are lots of Italians and Italian, you know, family names in the south of France, right?
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking about the French Riviera, and we're joined by Nina Sefusati and Véronique Savoy. Savoy, that's the region just north of the area, isn't it?
Yes. My husband's last name was from La Savoie, and it was spelled differently at the time. But I think that's where it came from. That's the story I always heard.
That sounds like it's believable to me if his last name is Savoy.
Savoie. It's pronounced Savoie, like the region.
Our phone number is 877-333-7425. And Monique, a good French name, is calling from West Newbury in Massachusetts. Monique, bonjour.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Do you have some thoughts on your experience in the French Riviera?
Yeah, so my family spent one day on the Cap Ferrat. We followed some suggestions from your guidebook to take a walk along this peninsula that goes by Paloma Beach, and it's a beautiful trail. It's very easy. It's mostly flat. I think parts of it were paved. And just really enjoy the views, and you can stop on the beach. We even stopped and collected tiny little pieces of sea glass. They were just all over the beaches everywhere, and I thought maybe the yachts must toss lots of wine bottles into the ocean.
So sea glass, is that what we call broken glass that's been sanded smooth and now it's just kind of colorful?
Yes.
That's interesting.
I don't know
if
they call it anything in French or not, but
yeah, it's good. But you're talking about, just for our listeners here, you're talking about Cap Ferrat, the Ferrat Cape, and it's very close to Villefranche-sur-Mer.
Villefranche-sur-Mer,
and you can almost walk there. And as Monique is talking about, there's a like almost a paved path around this peninsula. Mm-hmm. And what I remember is it's just you're walking by all of these very elegant chateau. And in the middle, there's a Rothschild chateau, a palace, mm-hmm. a villa.
If we see the Rothschild, yeah.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
To the, yeah, the gardens are magnificent.
I think Leonard Nimoy had a house out there, mm-hmm. you know.
Lots of David Niven.
David Niven.
Very close by, yeah.
And the cool thing about it is there are these beaches. Now, Monique, you went to the Paloma Beach?
Well, so we walked, the walk that we took started there. So we did stop there, and my family wanted to stop and rent chairs for the day. It was early in the day, but I had bigger plans for us that meant walking all along the whole peninsula. And so after that, we went, I think we had to take a bus back over to, I can't remember, what's the name of the other beach? It's Place de Passage. And it's another beach that's beautiful too. And so by the time we got there, unfortunately, it was a Saturday in June. And I hadn't thought that we needed to reserve the chairs ahead of time. So when we got there in the afternoon, it was too late. And our teenager was a little disappointed, but there's always still public access there, and you just can't use the chairs.
Well, I remember my favorite beach on Cap Ferrat is 50-50. It's a tiny little beach. It's just below the Rothschild Villa.
Yeah.
And half of it has a restaurant, and you pay to have a piece of the mm-hmm. beach. And half of it is
public. It should be where you can go. Yeah.
But
yeah.
Saturday afternoon, you might be asking for crowds. But generally, there's a beautiful opportunity. And if you have $20, you can rent a chair. And if you want to just sit on the rocks, you can do that.
Yeah. The problem, obviously, is the crowds, right?
So what did you end up doing, Monique?
So we decided not to let it ruin our afternoon. We just plopped down right on the pebbly sand, and we didn't even have towels. I thought that it would be very touristy, and we would be able to purchase those there, but it wasn't really like that. It seemed like mostly locals at the time we were there anyway. Mm-hmm. So we just sat there, and we laid down, and we actually all fell asleep. And we had a really great time. We were able to purchase some snacks there at the shack.
So you were roughing it. You were roughing it in the shadow of the Villa Rothschild.
But there were lots of other people doing the same thing, and it was great. And we actually, there was a man that we saw there with a dog that had been on the bus with us in the morning, and he was on the public side, and he had his little dog with him, and he recognized us, and he smiled at me, and he was making some sun tea, and I'll always remember that.
Ah, that's beautiful.
So, yeah, it was still a great day. We didn't have any regrets, and
I would recommend
reserving ahead if that's something that you want to do.
That's a good idea. Thanks, Monique, for the call.
Thank you.
Our Travel with Rick Steves guides to the Côte d'Azur in the southeast corner of France are Véronique Savoy and Nina Sefuzati. Nina, one of my favorite sites in the French Riviera is one that I know you like. It's the Trophy of the Alps, right? Mm-hmm, Tell us what that is.
La Turbie, yeah. It's an interesting historic site because it's the Emperor Augustus. Now showing a little propaganda, if I can say that, he has conquered these tribes, right, in the south of France.
So this is like in the first century or something.
It's 6 BC, actually.
6 BC?
Yeah.
And so they beat the last of the barbarian tribes in that area?
Well, no barbarians, please.
I'm sorry, the proto-French.
Ligurian tribes.
The Ligurian,
but it's
okay.
Something like 45 tribes that he actually conquered, right? So obviously it's this huge monument that is much smaller nowadays because it was taken apart, right, later governments.
But there's this 2,000-year-old Roman monument on the hilltop above Monte Carlo.
Above Monte Carlo. That's the great thing about it. And you have this lawn, this huge lawn around it.
Oh, yeah.
I've brought people, we've picnicked actually in the shade of the trophy of Augustus, and you have this view of Monaco, which is just incredible.
And then you have an ancient Roman relief, a sculpture that shows a Roman general with his boot on the neck of one of the tribes people that he conquered.
As I said, piece of propaganda.
Oh, yeah. And that, in a lot of ways, kicked off the Pax Romana. The Roman Empire had broken the spirit and the back of the, of the tribes that it wanted to control, and now they ushered in 2,000 years of stability.
I guess
You know, everybody's happy as long as the boot of the emperor is holding your neck
to the
ground.
You have to accept certain things, you know, to get the peace.
So that's the trophy of the Alps. And Veronique, what's a special angle of the French Riviera that we might also miss and that you should think we should be aware of?
I'm sorry, I'm going to be about food because I'm French. And I do like street food in Nice. I think Nice has great, and the Riviera for that matter, but Nice has great street food and I really enjoy it. From the soca to the pizza saladiere, that's like a pizza with, you know, stewed onions on top.
And the soca is that chickpea crepe.
The chickpea crepe. And a glass of rosé, a slice of soca or a slice of pizza saladiere or a slice of pizza, because we just said Nice has excellent pizza, right there on the Pebble Beach.
Right on the Pebble Beach. And you know what I like to, I know the restaurant you're talking about. There's a beautiful restaurant on the beach, and I always have to get a salad niçoise.
Oh, is this the one right close to the big cliff?
Right close to the cliff, yeah.
Yes. What's the name? It's famous, Nina. Do you remember? I forgot the name.
People can find it. But a salad niçoise is just a good basic $10 or $15 lunch.
And you can have that inside a sandwich, and it's called a pain bagnat. So the pain bagnat is that big round bread you slice open, and you put the salad niçoise inside, kind of, and so that becomes a pain bagnat.
It's literally a salad from Nice.
Salad niçoise.
I want to close the conversation just with what makes a salad niçoise really good. Nina?
Anchovies?
Anchovies. And Veronique?
Well, I talk to the Niçois and they tell me that in the Niçois salad, the real one, there are no green beans.
That's
and everywhere you eat it, they put green beans in it. And so in Nice, very often, there are no green beans.
So trade away the green beans and have an extra anchovies.
Exactly. I like anchovies too, so I agree with Nina.
All right. Nina and Veronique, thank you very much for a better understanding of the French Riviera. Merci bien.
Merci.
Merci.
Some of our listeners have used a link at ricksteves.com/radio to send us haiku they've written about their impressions of France. Like these.
John Allen from Tacoma, Washington, writes us a haiku about the architectural appreciation he developed in the north of France. Bayeux Cathedral. Gothic sits on Romanesque like a wedding cake. Carl Carlson from Kailua Kona, Hawaii, sends us this haiku memory from his trip to France. Sancerre on a hill. Sauvignon Blanc at its best. We need to return. And Bill Gregory of Portland, Oregon, prefers to write limericks instead of haiku. He sends us this one that he wrote in France to commemorate its historical ties with the United States and the citizens who have given their lives for each other's freedom. When Washington met Lafayette, the link between our countries was set. Together we fought, and freedom we got, and so let us never forget.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced by Tim Tatton, Casmara Hall, and Donna Bardsley at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington. Thanks to our colleagues at Radio Canada in Montreal for their help this week. Gretchen Strauch read our listener travel haiku. Hear more about the museums in Paris with Emma Jacobs and James Gardner on our website, ricksteves.com/radio. See you next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.